From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, this is Bob Levy. I'm here with our Executive Vice President, Ivan Butts, here at National Association of Postal Supervisors headquarters. And Ivan has come back from the field. He's visited a number of states at their conventions and training meetings. And I'd just like to ask Ivan what he's hearing from the field these days.
Well, good morning, Bob. I think our convention season is going well. Chuck and myself have been going around to the various state conventions and speaking with our membership. Obviously, the number one issue on their mind is the pay talks, the fact-finding, the panel's recommendations, and then ultimately the post office's almost unilateral denial of all the recommendations offered by the fact-finding panel. And then what are the next steps that NAPS is looking to do, or if this is the end of the process as it was in 2012 when we had to go through the fact-finding process. So, you know, really, we're still weighing all the options out with the past 2 years. That really was initiated by Lewis Atkins, our past president, before he retired. So we continue to working with the group as a group and coming up with what our next actions, what our next steps are. Obviously, there's some things that we want to look at legislatively to do to bring some light to this issue. And I'll continue to work on that with your help, obviously, sure. Bob, and the help of Bruce Moyer. We'll continue to work to address the issues that we see in the fact findings recommendations, and as well as in the responses that we've gotten from the USPS leadership.
Yes, and the Congress is very interested in the deliberations in terms of the fact finding process, because it is in Title 39, a statute that was adopted back in the late 1970s in terms of providing EAS-level employees, but particularly postal supervisors, the right to engage constructively, and I put that in quotes, with postal headquarters over pay and compensation schedules. So members of Congress are interested because it does affect employee morale. It affects, in fact, it'll affect probably the results of a postal pulse and, you know, customer satisfaction, because if you have a cohort group that does not feel it's being treated fairly, that can have impacts across the board.
Yeah, it can, Bob. And I think that's one of the glaring things for me coming out of the fact-finding panel's recommendation was that, you know, this adherence to the statutory requirements of Title 39 in the four areas that they were looking at in our fact-finding process, that they found that the Postal Service is not adhering to the statutes of Title 39 in those four key areas. And I think that's very significant for us moving forward to address. And I do appreciate, you know, the beginning talks we had with legislators and their understanding, or helping them to gain some understanding and knowledge of this issue, and hopefully, you know, gather some support for engagement with the leadership of the agency in helping us correct this pay issue for EAS.
So Ivan, all EAS employees should be assured and are sort of looking to the executive board of NAPS and to the resident officers to lead the way, and we are confident that you are exploring all viable options to pursue a fair and equitable course for EAS level employees with regard to the consultative process and the fact-finding decision in favor of NAPS.
Absolutely. That's one thing, you know, we've all have guaranteed and been saying to membership when we've been out there, you know, as far as for me, you know, I'm 100% committed to supporting the EAS members of the United States Postal Service and fighting this issue about pay. We've been going through it since 2009, and you've read that probably in my article. If you've read my articles in the last couple of months, I've been talking about how long this process has been going on with this pay deterioration and the loss of wealth for EAS. So this is a fight that we know it's going to take a while. It's not going to happen overnight. You know, the problems that we are seeing with our pay didn't occur overnight, and they're not going to be corrected overnight. But one thing you can be sure of is that, you know, as one of the resident officers, that I am committed to fight the fight for the members of this association and all EAS within the Postal Service.
Thank you. And I know they're very confident in your leadership and Brian's leadership and Chuck's leadership in representing their interests. Let's pivot a little bit to legislation. Yesterday, which was Wednesday, the 12th of June, the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee held a confirmation hearing on one of its nominees, one of the president's nominees to the Postal Board of Governors, John Barger. He is a financial professional out of California. At the very end of those confirmation hearings, he was asked by one of the panelists, one of the senators, about any last thoughts about a vision for the Postal Service. And at that point, he volunteered that although the universal service obligation is important to the Postal Service and is something that is ingrained as part of the American experience, that that has to be weighed against the institution's ability to raise the resources to support that universal service obligation. It would seem, Ivan, that the sacred nature of the universal service obligation and what it means is now under attack or under threat.
Yeah, and we've heard this similar discussion about the USO and how do we as an agency, United States Postal Service, move forward to provide service to America under the USO. And this methodology that's being, bannered around a little bit surrounding, you know, who needs the USO and doesn't, really kind of feeds a narrative to the detriment of America's United States Postal Service and who's going to get service and who's not going to get service. That's something definitely that we're not against. We are against, and we'll continue to work with legislators to come up with. We know we need sound reform. We need to be able to function as an agency, but we also know that we need to continue to be America's United States Postal Service and to continue to bind this country together as we were constitutionally enacted to do.
Yeah, that binding seems to be loosening these days, or the seams that sort of tie postal reliant communities to providers of certain types of postal services seems to be sort of very challenged these days. When we talk about universal service, we're talking about is that postal service accessible to everyone in a non-discriminatory fashion? So when folks within the administration, when folks who are undergoing confirmation hearings says, well, we may not be able to live up to that obligation, whether it be accessibility, affordability, or frequency, that's something that should have red lights flashing to all folks who care about the Postal Service.
Absolutely, it should. I believe that, you know, service is the key part of who we are. We're providing a service, and I think one of the conflicts that we see in this move to make this a business like corporation is not focused on what it needs to focus on, service. I think if you look at universal service obligation and its impact, it's on every American to have access to mail delivery. And the importance of that is to every American, whether it's the birthday card from grandma or the business advertisement or the circular, or definitely the medicine that we're seeing being shipped amongst the other parcels. Again, these items are important to the American consumers that are making these commerce transactions and receiving this letters and correspondence from their family members. And let's not forget our servicemen and women overseas fighting for our country who rely on the United States Postal Service also. So a universal service obligation is what it is, and it stands for what it stands for, universal service obligation. And as a country, we need to maintain that for every American, whether they're home or abroad.
Yeah, President's Task Force, as we might recall, released its report back in 2018, to the end of 2018, indicated that maybe this universal service obligation should be narrowed to, quote-unquote, essential mail services, whatever that means. And you seem to detect a parroting of that sort of line of reasoning amongst a number of folks who are watching the Postal Service these days, in addition to those who are undergoing confirmation right now.
Yeah, but, and then you said it correctly, Bob, what does that mean? Again, I think we see in the task force report, as I stated, I guess a couple of podcasts ago, we see that, you know, there are a lot of words being used, but to kind of, I would just say, skirt around the focus of what I believe the task force is goal is, and it really kind of stems back to what OMB,
the Office of Management and Budget.
Correct. The Office of Management and Budget, what their report they put out on the overall reconstruction of the federal government and what it called for the Postal Service to do, and that was to be fixed and privatized. And I think you see the same thing in the task force report. You see that same thing. The language is toned down a little bit, but you still see the same results of this privatization model. So I think, you know, at some point in time, we have to determine, is America's Postal Service still viable and necessary to America, to the American people? And obviously we say, and NAPS, that yes, that's 100% the fact. The United States Postal Service is still necessary and is still viable to the American people.
Now, last week on this podcast, I had as my guest Congressman Mark Meadows, who's the immediate past chairman of the Postal Subcommittee and now is the ranking member of that Postal Subcommittee, and also a senior member of the House Oversight and Reform Committee. And he indicated, in his view, that the universal service obligation includes frequency, which includes six-day mail delivery, and it includes non-discriminatory mail service to both rural, suburban, and urban districts. In fact, he distanced himself quite notably from the results of the task force. So this is not a partisan issue, the issue of universal service obligation being what we all understand it to be. This is a congressional issue versus apparently an administration issue.
Yeah, I think you see, and that was an excellent podcast with Mr. Meadows. I think what you see in his leadership and his statement on the USO and in service is what you see from a lot of our congressional leaders, is that, you know, the Postal Service needs to maintain its obligation of six-day mail delivery, mail service door-to-door, and then expanding that to 7 days delivery. Now, there are innovations and other things that we should look at, but the basic fulfillment of our USO is critical to America, not just to the Postal Service, but also to America. It was good that during the hearing we were at a few weeks ago that Mr. Meadows made it clear to the PMG that 5-day delivery was something that wasn't even on the table for him, moving forward to postal reform, any postal reform legislation. So we, you know, we certainly agree and thank him for his leadership. We understand fully the impacts that reducing mail operations and cutting mail operations. We've seen it firsthand what it does not only to the mail centers who process the mail, which is mostly near urban areas, but also the greatest impact that we've seen, and we've seen it before, is to what happens to rural America. Rural America gets cut off. When we close all those processing plants, rural America's service suffered. And they suffered. They took the brunt of the loss of mail delivery. And we don't, the Postal Service and the leadership of NAPS wants to see our Postal Service continue to be the agency that serves America through the binding of mail in post roads. And again, some of these cuts obviously showed that's not going to happen if we continue to cut from this infrastructure the way we have been.
Yeah, we're looking at an entity that accounts for around 8% of the gross domestic product in this country, based upon the last estimate. And that gross domestic product is not just the delivery of large mailers, the Amazons of the world, the Kmarts of the world, the Walmarts of the world to rural America. That's also rural America selling its products to urban areas. So it's an interactive relationship between the two marketplaces. And we have to understand that, because if you cut off access of rural America to an affordable way of transporting its products to other parts of the country, you can devastate small businesses in rural America.
Absolutely. And not just that. I mean, you know, it's known that the Postal Service, we support a $1 trillion mailing industry. So you're right. It goes far beyond just what we do as a federal agency to serve America. It goes to the paper manufacturers, the printers, the makers of envelopes, the shippers. It's in the shipping. You have Amazons, you have the Amazon, you have the Walmarts, the Targets. I mean, we hit every avenue of American life. It comes through the United States Postal Service.
Now, I want to change topics, if I can, Ivan, come back to your visits to the state conventions, particularly with raising our resources for the Supervisors Political Action Committee, which enables us to sort of have a lot of face time with actual policymakers. I know that we have been sending out a lot of NAPS members to events back home. Tell me if you can explain what the value is of those interactions back home.
Well, so far this year, Bob, I think we've done a tremendous job, as we have in each year since I've been up here since 2014, in growing our SPAC, growing our commitment, growing our footprint up here in Washington, D.C. One of my initiatives, as I've told many people when I go out, I want to also grow our footprint out in the local area, by sending local people to local events with their legislators, and we're getting better and better at doing that. We're getting more people out, really, we're getting more the funds coming in. I really appreciate you guys, what you're doing out there at the state conventions and area and regional events, and collecting money for our SPAC. Right now, I think we're in very good shape. Our PAC account. So we're going to be looking, as we go into this 2020 election season, we're going to look to do the same things we were able to do in 2018, identify new partners that we can make and support our champions that we have as we go forward. But it's your SPAC dollars that really keep that going and keep that initiated. So thank you guys for what you have been doing. Thank you guys for what you continue to do. And I just look forward to seeing the ones that I have coming up down the road, and just to thank you personally also for what you do for SPAC.
Yeah, and we recognize those folks who contribute generously to SPAC. We have different categories of recognition, beginning at $100 and going up beyond $1,000 for our President's Ultimate, which is a truly an inspiration for politics and representing NAPS issues before Congress. One of the things that sort of like the difficult things to talk about, it's really important not only for the collection of money, but also the logistics of collecting. And we want everyone to get credit for the money that they contribute to SPAC. And that's so important that when you get those envelopes, that you complete it, you fill it out completely so you can get credit for it and your branch will get credit because you got credit for it, as well as your state will get credit for it. So no matter how small, even if you're contributing in a 50-50 raffle where you think that that contribution is nominal or insignificant, it counts. And in fact, the Federal Election Commission requires us to account for every dollar that comes into our political action committee. So please, 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 even if you think you're contributing a very small amount, it's important that you get recognition and that we can account for that money. So you get credit, so your state gets credit, and so it's able to be put to good use on your bet, in your interest.
And that's a good point, Bob, and I thank you for bringing that up. We understand, or at least I understand, that there's been some issues with the new envelope system that we put in place, and there's some things we want to look at and work on to try to make that system better. But Bob pointed out the criticalness of us being able to properly record our contributions to the FEC, and so we maintain a responsibility as an association to kind of do it the right way. You know, I understand that there's really a problem. There seems to be some problems when we start doing 50-50s, which is the hardest thing to do, probably the most popular fundraising thing to do, probably, but the most hardest thing for us to maintain a proper paper trail on it. Bob actually kind of worked on a form to work in conjunction with the envelope. For the form would be strictly for the 50-50 process. An envelope really works great for in-kind contributions and then just regular donations. So, but I want to talk with the auxiliary first and get their full input put on this new process of the form. And then hopefully we can make that roll out and make it the entire SPAC fundraising process a little more smoother. But again, I do hear you. I'm out there and I see that some places did have some difficulties with it, just as some places really did a great job with it and had no problems with using the envelopes at all. But we want to look at it all sides, as always, trying to do whatever we can to tweak it and make it better for you as membership. That's the goal, making it better for you as membership.
Yeah, this is an evolving process that we're undergoing right now. In order to be in full compliance, in order to give credit to everyone who is so generous with their contributions to SPAC, and a real shout out to our auxiliary who do a wonderful job in promoting SPAC throughout the country. So, Ivan, I'm going to wish you a great weekend, and until next week.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter.